when I do see really powerful sonic branding, it's impressive. It stands out. You know, there was one I looked at. It was a luxury airline, or it was a luxury experience, I want to say. They sold like really specific vacations to remote parts of the world that were really luxury experiences and really interesting. And they had a really cohesive sonic branding that wasn't music. It was just a really intentional sound design approach where they had a lot of the sounds of the place. They really focused on the sense of place. So when it was in Japan, it would be the sound of that like water bamboo thing, you know, really magnified, and then the sound of like an old wooden gate closing, and then the sound of someone like folding a paper crane, like really delicate, beautifully recorded sounds that they would shape into the commercial. And so that wasn't music, but it was across every single ad, had the same kind of vibe of this really intentional, beautiful sound design that evoked a sense of place. And that was just so cool. And so when I see something like that, I'm like, that's what you can do. Why are you doing just random samples when you could have a really nice effect and like memorable impression?
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Caitlin Trevor.
Are there other things that you found out from the usability of just general phone trees and on hold and stuff that maybe surprised you?
Yeah, there were some interesting choices companies made that I don't think they realized they were doing that were really bad.
I think that's the major problem, that they don't really realize they're making bad choices.
Yes.
And people think IVR and on hold is like, oh, the toss away, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't really pay much attention to it.
I know.
But that's where your people are going to find you. Like,
yeah.
It seems like a waste, but yeah, sorry I interrupted.
No,
go ahead.
Okay. You're totally right. And for some companies, it's so crucial. Like this was a healthcare company, right? Where people are calling to make appointments at hospitals and calling about results. And it's one of the companies you call a lot. You know, you don't call every company, right? You call, I want to say, airlines a lot. You call, you know, to cancel flights or whatever. You call hospitals. I don't know. I haven't made a list in my head right now, but there are certain companies where this is a crucial customer touch point.
Telecommunications.
Yeah, telecommunications, exactly. Come on. There were a lot of interesting things. Like something I knew was going to test well because I actually love it. I noticed it on my phone tree here in the UK with the medical place I call, is that they tell you your place in the queue. And I found that was really nice. It would say, oh, you're number 20 in the queue. And then, you know, oh, I can hang up and call back later because that's a lot. Or if they say you're next, you're like, oh, great. I don't mind waiting. You know, it has a huge impact on how you feel about the wait time. And people were saying that also in the listening test, because when I picked the hospitals to call, I picked a variety of phone experiences. You know, some of them had music, some of them didn't, some of them said if you want to call back, hang up, you know, some of that's also something they loved because of the minute issue, is they liked callback option.
I enjoy that myself, actually. I think that's very useful.
Super nice. You know what I found surprising was the opinion about ads was mixed. Some people liked it. I was like, you like this? I personally don't want to listen to ads on the phone. So I was like, really? And some people, of course, were like, no, I hate this. Especially if it's in the phone tree, this is so annoying. Like, on hold is one thing, but if it's in the tree, taking up time before telling you the options to press, that's super annoying.
Yeah, I would think that most of the people that use them while you're on hold waiting.
Yes.
As opposed to in the phone tree itself. Because you're right, like, the longer it takes for them to give you the options, the longer you're waiting, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And also someone pointed out, and I thought this was interesting, that when you hear it on hold, when you're on hold and hear music, your ear is really listening for a voice because you're hoping that voice is saying, hello, how can I help you? And you're like, oh, thank God. But if it's just, we want to tell you about our special new, you're like, oh, And so it was a stress thing for them. Every time they heard a voice, they thought, oh, someone's answering. And then when it was a commercial, they were extra annoyed by the commercial.
I did not realize that. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that was interesting. Mm-hmm. I remember there was something with language options because most places had Arabic when you answered and then said for English, press 2. But there was one hospital phone, which it was a UK hospital that was there in that country. So I guess I understand why it was started in English and then asked for Arabic, press 2. But one of my participants said, like, if my mom called this phone, if she called this hospital, she doesn't speak English, she would immediately assume she called the wrong number and hang up. She wouldn't wait for them to say, for Arabic, press 2. She would just be like, what? English? Nope. And just hang up. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting regional consideration.
Did it give the option in Arabic?
Yeah, like, but not like, for a while, you know.
Like, well, okay. So it would answer in English. Yeah. I mean, I can see why she would be put off by that. Definitely.
It would say,
but
like,
I know, like,
oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I know, like, when a hospital is called here, we have French and English. Mm. And of course, mm-hmm. it's on everything. Right. But when they give you the French option, they say it in French.
Ah, yeah. So, no, they do say it in Arabic, but it was a while because they say, welcome to the English hospital, blah, blah, blah. Thank you for calling. And then they finally say, for Arabic, press 2, which she said just, that's too long.
By then she'd have hung up. Yeah.
By then it's over.
Yeah.
And I think, it's one of those things that it was a really international place I was researching. But, you know, it still was, Arabic was still like the local language. And so it's like, you really should prioritize maybe the local language first, because anyone who's not local is going to expect that, right? They know when they call, it's going to be probably Arabic first, and then there's an English option. I know that from living in Switzerland. I called a lot of numbers, started in German, and I would patiently wait, and then they would sometimes switch to French, and I would keep waiting, and then finally English. I was like, there we go. Or if they never said English, I would panic and hang up because I don't speak either language. But, locals, I think, in my opinion, I mean, I think they should have the priority language first and then.
Oh, yeah. Localization is very important.
Yeah.
Definitely. Especially in phone trees.
Yeah.
When you're trying to reach people. I mean, that's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another thing was music during the menu is kind of a problem. So there's sometimes they have music during the menu and on hold. Sometimes they only have it on hold. Sometimes they have nothing. But music during the menu can be really bad because it makes it hard to hear the options, you know? Especially, it can be really poorly mixed so that it'll say, press 1 for this, and then the music blares, and then it goes quiet, and it says, press 2 for this, and then it blares, and this is really awful.
And they also do that. They do that in some ads, too.
Like,
The voices then, and the, you know, you can hear the voice, and then the music pops up again when there's no voice. That's a setting, I think, in production that they have to be very conscious of.
It was in my report. I was like, if you do put it in the menu, I was like, mm-hmm. I'd strongly recommend not putting it in the menu. But if you do, you have to be really careful how you mix it with the voice and also how you mix it with the on hold music. Because sometimes what they do when it switches to on hold, they ramp up the volume. And that's very annoying as well for listeners. Like, if you're going to put it in the menu and on hold, it has to stay the same level. So all these little intricacies I would never have come across in Lit Review. That was really from a usability study. And again, some of it was culturally specific, which was really interesting, but some of it wasn't, that I would really love to kind of see if I can turn it into kind of a white paper about, you know, just general advice on doing phone trees. Please.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people should read it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But I'm glad we got to chat about it in detail because I think that's a good example of why UX research works well for this kind of thing, a phone tree, because a usability study is something that works well to understand how a phone tree works, as opposed to short audio things like a sonic logo. That's not going to work well with a usability test, right? That's not what UX research is good for, actually.
Yeah. It's a different problem that's being solved.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what is your company mission? Do you have something specific?
One of the major things I want to do is help sonic branding companies by using research to show the importance of sound and the impact of sound and the power sound can have. That's a huge, huge part of my mission. And it's what I bring, you know, whenever I talk to companies, like I do this for them in pitch meetings. You know, I help show the ROI of sonic branding is one thing. I do competitive research to show where the sonic landscape is and how they can fit into it, you know, kind of more typical sonic branding research work. But then I also do research, you know, I bring literature review into that, you know, like I recently did a project where they were developing different notification sounds for people who were on call. So they had to hear this sound. It was really important. But they realized there were kind of different user needs. They wanted to meet a bunch of different needs with their new notifications. So some people are really deep sleepers and they can't wake up. And so they need like a notification that's going to wake a deep sleeper. Some people don't want to bother their family. So they want one that's kind of not going to be as invasive. So when I use research to help with this, for example, with the deep sleeper, I was able to look at research on fire alarms and how effective they were at waking people and different types of fire alarms and different ages and all these things. And this was fascinating because I found that actually the typical fire alarm is not the most effective. You know, this kind of house alarm of like, it's at around 3000 hertz, really high pitch. This is not great. Actually, a lower pitched one around, I think it was 500 hertz, is more effective at waking people up. So that I had never heard of in my life. So that was really interesting. But this is the kind of research, you know, then what I do with that is I give that to the sonic branding team and say, look, this is what I found. You might want to consider crafting a sonic notification sound that's around that frequency, you know, to wake people up. So it's sort of two parts there. One part is kind of defending the sonic branding world and the music world and the audio world with research, you know, showing people it matters, it's important, it impacts people's behavior. That's part of my sound effect series we can talk about after I wrap this point up. And then the other big part of it is helping inform creative decisions. So helping guide these creative sound teams with research. And that's kind of an example of that where they were like, we need to make these notification sounds and we don't really know where to get started. Can you help us with research? Just give us some guidance. So yeah, those are the two big halves of what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And I was actually going to ask you about the sound effects series. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, I really have enjoyed this project. And this totally was inspired by that first mission, that it's all about showing how much sound can actually affect behavior, especially not just emotion ratings or annoyance ratings, or I don't know, not just about what we think it does, but really like showing sound can change what you do in your life, in your daily life, which I think is really cool. And it also has to be, I have a lot of strict guidelines for which papers can be featured. It has to be quantitative results, which is a little kind of funny, I guess, because what I do now is typically qualitative research, but quantitative results, when you want to convince people that sound matters, they're harder to argue against.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Can you define the two, just sure, so that people understand that?
So quantitative is anything with numbers, you know? So for example, research on, like, one of my sound effects series looks at speeding. It was looking at musical highways in Japan. So there was a tunnel where people were speeding too much and having accidents. And they wanted to come up with a solution to have people not speed. And they came up with this really fun one where they put down strips in the road to kind of create like a, basically, if you drive over it at the right speed, you will hear a tune. Your car almost becomes like a music box and you hear the tune in your car, which is really cool.
I actually featured this in one of my previous episodes, and we actually played a video where someone in a car was videotaping this.
Oh, nice.
Video recording. There's no tape anymore. Jeez. Okay, so video recording what was happening, probably from their phone, and the tune that was played as they listened to this. I don't know that it was in Japan, though. I want to say it was somewhere in the Nordics, so I'm not sure exactly where.
Yeah, I think there are someone in the Nordics. There are a few all over the world now, but I think most of them are in Japan. They're like really popular there, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just to give an example of quantitative results, they were able to measure, you know, like how much did speeding actually change, or how many less accidents were there, as opposed to qualitative results are more like interview results, like descriptive. They don't have numbers. They're just people telling you how they feel about something. Or so I look for quantitative work for the sound effect series because I'm trying to provide evidence that's really hard to push back against, essentially. And it has to be behavioral, as I said before. So yeah, the musical highway is one example. I had them all pulled up because I thought it'd be fun to give another one. Oh yeah,
I was just going to say there was another one where they put piano keys on a stairway.
That was my first entry, actually. Odin Platzer. I have it in here.
Was that in Germany somewhere?
It's in Stockholm, Sweden. The Odin.
Oh, Sweden. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
The metro stairs. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so cool. That was one of the very first things I came across when I started this podcast like 5 years ago.
Wow.
And I just thought it was fascinating.
I know. I loved it. It was one of, it kind of inspired, I guess, the entire series. I think I found that and thought that is so cool that they showed that music affected people's behavior. That's like, how exciting is that? But yeah, that was my very first one, my Metro Stare episode.
I'm sure you've come across more, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm at Sound Effect 26 now. And I'm aiming to get to 100, actually. And then I'm hoping
to... So what's the most fascinating one to you besides the two that we've talked about?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to go through because I'm trying to remind myself of all the ones. I did actually talk about... One of them is the fire alarm thing that I found out because I thought that's something people should know. It's like,
yeah, but, interesting, you know, that it needs to be a lower pitch. I would never have thought that too.
Me neither. I like this one that this one researcher, they looked at batching phone notifications 3 times daily. They were curious if turning off notifications versus batching your notifications versus just letting them play whenever. How much does that affect your screen time and how often you're like unlocking your phone? And it turned out batching the notifications 3 times daily was the best one. And I thought that was really interesting because I had never considered that as a possibility. I don't think you can do that on your phone for now.
I don't think so. I think you can turn them off there are settings where you can say between this hour and this hour, I don't want any notifications. Like you can you can put like a sleep mode on so that like your phone might be beside you on a night table. But between the hours of, say, 10 o'clock at night and 7 in the morning, it's not going to notify you about anything.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that's sort of batching in a way, right? It's at least cutting off some hours so you're not constantly bothered. But it was interesting, because I had previously found a paper showing that when you turn off notifications completely, you actually check your phone more than if you leave them on because you have this like fear of missing out, essentially.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, that was number 14. It was people who had their phones on mute picked up their phone 48 more times per day and spent 52 extra minutes on their phone.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. Yeah. So it was pretty crazy. That was unexpected to me. I was like, I would have, you know, I silence my phone when I can. And so that kind of made me think twice about that. Like maybe I shouldn't be silencing it, actually.
I have mine on vibrate. So I can still hear something, but I'm not hearing like, you know, a whole musical symphony every time there's a notification. I don't need that.
Exactly. Yeah. I usually prefer vibrate as well. But I thought the findings were interesting because they showed that, you know, I think people dismiss sonic branding with notification sounds because they say, well, I just silenced my phone. And it's like, well, actually, that doesn't help. you know, it means that we need to design these notification sounds in a way where people don't think that it's going to be better if they silence them. You know, it points out that it is important, actually. And it's just, we need to find a different design solution, which is great. That's the kind of work I'm really excited about because it helps with what I do. There was one more I would mention that I really thought was fun. I think it was number 5. Let me find it. It was, yeah. I really hate crazy drivers. So I'm excited when I find things about how to make people drive less crazy.
I always appreciate that too.
Yeah. I really hate that. So this one was about tailgating, and it was this idea that you could put this in-car sound system that grew increasingly dissonant and metallic and threatening as drivers got too close to the vehicle ahead. So sort of scaring them away from tailgating, which that was really fun. And it did work pretty well.
Did it work?
Yeah. On average, drivers spent 25 seconds less in gaps that were pretty close compared to when neutral sounds were used. So yeah, they did see an effect, which is really cool.
I mean, yeah. I know that my new vehicle, it's new as in like it's about a year and a half old right now. And the newer vehicles have notifications that tell you when someone's beside you either way, or when you're going off road, or, you know, like when you're doing something weird, you know, there is a notification that tells you something's off.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. I think that they do have some kind of a notification when you're getting too close to another vehicle, especially when you're backing out of a parking lot.
Yes.
I know I've heard a notification sound doing that.
Yeah. You typically hear like a beeping, right? Often. And it usually increases in urgency as you get too close. But that's also interesting to see when they compare different types of audio. And which one, because there was one I did on seatbelt warnings, because that's another issue in cars. You know, it's important that people wear their seatbelt, and every car has some kind of warning about your seatbelt, but some of them are more effective than others. Like some are easier to ignore. So this is sort of something that's kind of interesting with cars, because usually user experience is all about making people happy and like making their experience nice. And some of the car sound things, you actually want to kind of annoy them and make them annoyed so that they listen and they do it. So yeah, it was Sound Effect 19. It was requiring audible seatbelt reminders to last 90 seconds or longer could actually save thousands of lives. So they were looking at how long the alarms were going off and how much that influenced how many, you know, who put on their seatbelt. It was really interesting. Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Yeah. And it's funny because I suspect, I don't know if this is the truth, but maybe eventually you will research this. I don't know. But higher, more expensive cars might have a different listening experience. Mm-hmm. So it might still be annoying, but it might have a higher end feel to it. I don't know how, but a better sound system. I mean, you know, a Mercedes slamming the door sounds different than a Toyota Camry shutting the door, right? Like they're all different. So yeah,
I think it's a really cool world. I haven't had a chance yet to do my own research in yet, other than looking at these sound effect examples. But it is something Sonic Branding is super involved in these days, is all the car audio. And there are complicated questions with car audio, because safety is such a big concern alongside brand attributes, like you said, like luxury versus not luxury versus affordable.
Yeah. There's definitely a difference.
Yeah.
So how can someone see this sound effect series? Is it on your website?
It's on my LinkedIn for now.
Okay.
But I'm
okay.
going to put it on the website. That's kind of a project I'm working on. I want to put it on there as like a blog format kind of thing, so people can, because now there's so many, I don't feel like it's fun for
you
them
want
to
100.
Kind of scroll through. Yeah. The ultimate goal, I want to create a book out of the series would be. Yeah, that's kind of the goal. Once I get to around 30, I'll start doing like proposals for that.
That's a great idea. Yeah. They're all fascinating. So,
yeah, it's just fun. Yeah. It's a fun like just collection. And I think it'd be nice for Sonic branding teams to have on hand when it'll be organized by like kind of not really industry, but kind of use, like on the go versus on your phone versus, you know, sounds in your life, like where the sounds are in your life, examples of how they are impacting you and how, you know, they could be changed for the better. So they can turn to that for different industries they're pitching to or advertising about. They can say, you know, look at this example of how much it affects people's behavior. That's kind of, yeah, the goal.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think a lot of advertising doesn't quite understand the impact that this has. So my question to you would also be, like, how do you demonstrate to advertisers the ROI behind this?
That's a great question. I think something that's really tricky, because with sound, you know, in advertising and in the whole product experience, it's just one piece of a multimodal experience. So there's always the question of how do you tease sound out from the other things that are happening. But there is some really great work. Actually, the team at Massive Music recently published a really nice study looking at ROI of sonic branding. I can't remember all the details right now, but I do know it was a really nice example of them really trying to separate out the music campaign approach and how did that influence the return on investment in marketing specifically and overall. So that was a really nice one, but it's a kind of, they're leading the charge on that. Like, there's not a ton of research on this yet. There are a few that people cite all the time. There's an Ipsos study as well that people use quite a bit that wasn't actually about sonic branding specifically, but the results were really flattering for sonic branding. It was something like, if you have a sonic logo, it increases brand recall by, I think it was like 96%. It was really crazy.
Yeah, especially if you use the name of the company in the sonic logo, it mm-hmm. just ups it exponentially. It's huge.
Yeah. So there's not a lot out there, but there are a few studies here and there. It's something I'm interested in working on because I know it's so important for the sonic branding teams. It's like one of the main things they need for sales. So it's something that's becoming more of interest to me. And also, I've been thinking about doing a study. I think it's important for them to highlight which sonic experiences are the most important touch points for their customers, because there are ones we spend a lot more time with than others. Like we talked about with the phone. I mean, the phone is a huge sonic touch point that is really...
And yet so few people pay attention to it.
It's so on the side. Even now with the sonic branding teams I work with, it's often mentioned kind of like on the side. They're like, yeah, we can do phones, you know? And I'm thinking, but, you know, it would be interesting to understand what percentage of time people spend hearing these different sonic assets. Because if you could have that data, then you could show a company like, you really need to care about this touch point because they're spending a lot of time with that sound. So that's something I'm curious about doing, but I have yet to figure out exact methods for how to study this.
Hi, I'm Rune Eskilsen, coming from Fair Games Denmark, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness that power in your own life, keep listening.
So if there was one small audio change that someone could make in a campaign or in a user experience of some kind, what would you suggest someone to do in that case?
Oh, that's
I mean,
really
I guess it's
question.
Hard without knowing the industry and without, you know, but there's got to be some small thing to pay attention to that might help.
I think one of the most important things is really just caring about their perception of it. You know, I mean, sorry, that sounds really vague, but I think sometimes...
It was a vague question. It's okay.
I think sometimes, you know, it's sound is such an afterthought and people don't remember that it actually has a really big impact on the experience. You know, I think that's becoming a bit clearer with people caring more about neurodivergence and sound sensitivity. I think that's starting to become more of a conversation, which is really nice. And I think it's something luxury products have known for a long time. Like you said, like they've worked on slamming a car door sounding better and not so abrasive on luxury models, right? I think the same is true for like hair dryers. I think really expensive hair dryers have worked to be quieter and less annoying than like a cheap hair dryer.
It's funny though, when it comes to that, and the same with leaf blowers, if you don't hear it, if it isn't loud enough, you don't think it's working.
Yeah.
That's really another true. Aspect of our, you know, psychology, right?
Yes.
So there's a lot going on here. But yeah, what you say about just paying attention to it and not thinking of it as an afterthought
yeah.
is why I have this podcast.
Yeah. Or it's funny when I do competitive research, just seeing how many people have not thought about that at all. Like, I'll look through their videos for their company, and every single video has a different sound, different soundtrack, different song. And it's so weird. And I'm thinking, do you realize how disjointed this is, like perceptually? And it's a huge missed opportunity. So yeah, it's amazing to me when I see that, I have to say. And again, that's just them just not really caring about audio at all and just thinking, whatever, just throw some sample on there that's free and it's fine. And it's like, but you could be, when I do see really powerful sonic branding, it's impressive. It stands out. You know, there was one I looked at, it was a luxury airline, or it was a luxury like experience. I want to say they sold like really specific vacations to remote parts of the world that were really luxury experiences and really interesting. And they had a really cohesive sonic branding that wasn't music. It was just a really intentional sound design approach where they had a lot of the sounds of the place. They really focused on the sense of place. So when it was in Japan, it would show, it would be the sound of that like water bamboo thing, you know, really magnified. And then the sound of like an old wooden gate closing. And then the sound of someone like folding a paper crane, like really delicate, beautifully recorded sounds that they would shape into the commercial. And so that wasn't music, but it was across every single ad had the same kind of vibe of this really intentional, beautiful sound design that evoked a sense of place. And that was just so cool. And so when I see something like that, I'm like, that's what you can do. Why are you doing just random samples when you could have a really nice effect and like memorable impression? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And when you were talking about the human voice being something that we pay attention to, I mean, I'm a voice actor, so what I pay attention to is the human voice. And when people use a unifying voice across all of their ads and their corporate narration and whatever announcements they have in their office and they're on hold and all of this stuff, when the same voices are heard, that is another cohesive identity that people miss a lot of the times. Because I know, for instance, like there are campaigns for a whole bunch of different industries out there and companies where they'll do a campaign and they'll use one voice for that campaign, but then a year later, another voice, wow, different voice, you know, or five voices. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's no cohesion at all. And it seems like you were saying, like a missed opportunity to actually give people comfort.
Yes.
You know, because the less brain power we have to use to experience something, the more it's going to get into our psyche, you know?
You know, it reminds me of like hearing radio DJs, like hearing the same voice. When you turn on the radio, you expect a certain voice. And if it's a different one every time, it wouldn't feel, it would just be destabilizing. It would be disorienting. Yeah. And you'd be like, who is that? Why are they there?
Well, you get to know these people,
yeah,
right? So the voice that you use across a campaign becomes the voice of the company, becomes something that gives you comfort or makes you excited or gives you an understanding of who that company is. And, you know, I'm not saying my voice is right for all of that, but, you know, a voice that you are consistently using across the board for these things can really help with that unification. So,
yeah. I mean, it's something we actually have to design against in psychology, is this familiarity bias. The more time you spend with stimuli, whatever it is, a song, a picture, the longer you look at it, hear it, the more you like it. So when you're doing ratings of emotion or, I don't know, familiarity, likability, that's going to affect it, right? But, you know, so we know this and somehow we don't use it sometimes.
Yeah. We don't use it. It's funny. Well, I mean, that's why we have conversations like the one we're having here, so that people will learn.
Yeah. And pay attention to these things and hopefully value them.
Yeah. So we are coming to the end here, but I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you. So can you let them know how to find you on LinkedIn, how to find your company?
Sure. Yeah. The company is sonicuxr.com. But you can also find me on LinkedIn, Caitlin Trevor, it's my name. And my company's there. I'm the, founder and research director is my title, essentially. So you can find
Wonderful. It there. Yeah, I look forward to hearing more about what you get into later, because there's clearly more to do in this area of research.
Thanks. Yeah, it has been exciting because I haven't really come across anyone doing this really in the whole world, like this specific kind of UX approach to sound products.
Yeah. I don't know if you've come across Joe Sauer.
Oh, yeah. We work together a lot.
Yeah. Yes. So he's probably like the closest that I would say. But beyond the two of you, I haven't seen anyone. So
that's so funny you say that, because we're kind of forming like a partnership and working together.
Because that'd be great.
We are so similar. Yeah. In a lot of the things we look at, except he's really quantitative and I'm qualitative. So we work really well in tandem. He's perfect for sonic logos and sonic DNA tracks and any short sounds with his, implicit association testing. And then I'm better for these long form experiences. Like he can't really use that for like a foam tree, right? That's not the same. So that's why we're actually a really good match and it's been really fun. And I have so much to learn from Joe because he's such an expert in this field. He's been doing it forever. And every time we're on pitch meetings together, I'm like, oh man, Joe is so good at this. It's really nice. I have someone to really look up to and kind of hopefully mentor me through this new field.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah. And I have no doubt that you will be mentoring other people as you continue doing this and learning more. And there's still so much to learn. And of course, AI is getting involved in all of this.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, there's like a whole other, we didn't even really get into that.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I have AI discussions with so many people. I want to focus on the humanity right now.
Yeah. It was nice to focus on humanity. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin. This
thank
was a
you.
Really informative discussion, and I look forward to seeing what you are getting up to in the future.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was so fun to chat.
Thanks.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.